Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to another edition of the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, coming to you from the Mile High Two Daft Yanks Studios. And joining me in the Polar Two Daft Yanks Studios is my co-host, Corey Chatelain, who always has something to say about this weekend's action in footy. How are you doing, Corey?
I'm doing well, but no, I think this week I'm going to I think I'm going to mimic the greatest manager in the world, and I don't really have much to say this week.
Really? Nothing?
Nope. I have nothing to say.
Okay. Even Arsenal won? You have nothing to say about that?
Nope. Nothing to say.
Are you sure here? I don't know. I can't get another co-host to come on this late. You can't spring this on me.
Okay. No, I'll change my mind. I got one thing to say. Voce esta dimitide, voce babaca.
Is that Klingon?
I don't know. People can go look it up for themselves.
A little hint, that might be Portuguese.
Maybe.
It might be. All right, so welcome to the show, folks. We have lots to get to, so let's just get the crowd fired up and let's get into the topics. Now, for better or worse, we have been very Chelsea heavy over the past course of the month, but I think you have to be because of one of two things, Corey. First, to see a defending title winner in the situation that they're in right now is almost unheard of. So I think that draws a lot of attention, obviously. And then you have the Mourinho factor. And I'm thinking that Mourinho probably he needs to give a call to Balotelli to borrow that why always me shirt.
Well, yeah, but that's the problem with being the personality type that Mourinho is when you build yourself up so big, any sort of negative thing, people are going to come out with the knives. So when the negative, when the negative is this big, of course, everybody and their brother is going to come out with the knives, you know, to be looking to take a piece out of you.
That is right. And to illustrate how deep this goes, if you keep track of the popular posts page on twodaftyanks.com, a blog I had over a year ago entitled "Go Home, Jose Mourinho, You're Drunk" is now the number one blog on the website because people are searching Mourinho and drunk. And that's how they're finding it, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, because that may be a reason for his even more erratic than normal behavior lately, because maybe he is drunk.
All right, so let's get into the meat of this issue. Your score at Stamford Bridge was Liverpool 3, Chelsea 1. And here's just my initial thoughts on the game, Corey. Now, Chelsea got the early goal, and they settled in pretty well defensively, and it all came falling apart at the end of the first half in stoppage time with that great strike by Coutinho. But for a while there, it looked to me that maybe Chelsea was finally found their footing and was getting back to the winning formula that they had last year, to where they would score early, and then they would sit back and defend and wait to hit you on the counter to put you away. But they only got the job half done.
Well, yeah, and I think Chelsea this year versus Chelsea of years past, and especially under Mourinho, I think it's a perfect example of the difference between playing confidently with a certain set of tactics and then playing nervously with those same type of tactics. Because I think it's evident that this year, and especially recently, in years past, Chelsea gets a one goal lead, and you know Mourinho has his famous quote: "The easiest thing to do in soccer, or the easiest thing in football to do, is to win 1-0." Where this year, even with a one goal lead, they look much more nervous. Every mistake is highlighted, And even, you know, vaunted veterans with tons of experience like John Terry make, you know, have made a lot of defensive mistakes. And then obviously you have, you know, players like Branislav Ivanovic, who, as our buddy Jim put on his blog pretty well, looks like he's aged 10 years, you know, over the summer. And, you know, he's gone from arguably the best right back in the league to, you know, not even getting in the side and arguably, you know, looking like a be lucky to make a championship side right back.
Yeah, so if you look at the numbers now, here we're in early November. Chelsea have already lost 6 matches, and in their title-winning season of last year, they only lost 3. So just think about that. That's hard to comprehend.
Well, that, and they have 3 victories, 2 of which are against bottom side Villa, or current bottom side Villa, and the other, it was a contentious victory against Arsenal where, you know, they didn't take the lead until there was the controversial sending off of Gabriel. So 2 of the 3 victories they have could be argued are, you know, kind of tainted, and they were lucky to get. Because of the opposition and the circumstance.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. And I guess, and then you have the very odd post-game interview with Mourinho, to where he came out and he said, "I have nothing to say," and he kind of paused. And I thought for a second he was just going to walk away after that. And he probably should have. That would have been pretty epic. But no, he, for a guy who had nothing to say, he sure had a lot to say.
Yeah, which showed that it was just an act, because if you really had nothing to say, you would have said that. And like you said, you would have walked off and your point would have been made. But instead, he stood there and proceeded to say, "I have nothing to say," to 8 different questions or whatever it was, to where at that point, it's just an act. Again, for all his tactical genius, Mourinho never is pressed on any failure of tactics in a game. It always ends up with this ludicrous soap opera type stuff. So again, it's one of those to where, okay, I have nothing to say, I have nothing to say. And he says it 7-8 times, whatever. And that I can't recall an actual circumstance where Mourinho actually said anything about tactics in a game.
No, that's a good point. And I don't know who the interviewer was. It's a voice that we've heard, all of us have heard a lot before. But he gave Mourinho an out when he asked him, "Is there anything you'd like to say to the fans?" I mean, he kind of, you know, threw him a bone to say, "Hey, I'm going to let you get out of this. Here's a life preserver. You can save this. Here you go." And he still blew it.
Well, yeah, because he also had another out when he's, I forgot exactly what the question was. Oh, when he said something about I forgot how he exactly phrased it, but he said something to the, "You don't have anything to say about your how did he put it? Anyway, I can't remember, but anyway, it was basically an out for him to say, I don't have anything to say," and walk off. But his response was, "Oh, worried about what?" When the obvious response would, or, you know, the obvious insinuation of the guy's question was worried about your job because of today's result. But instead of saying, "I have nothing to say," and walk off, he said, "Oh, worried about what?" As if he didn't know.
Yeah. And it was a very odd situation. And then you saw the scenes to where it was him and his entire on-field staff, maybe some backroom guys too, I don't know, were in the middle of the pitch, a good, what I think they reported, 30 to 45 minutes after the match, having a little powwow. So that seems to me the actions of someone under some extreme pressure.
Well, yeah, and that's, like I said, it's one of those that for all his supposed genius and all of this, knowing the ins and outs of coaching, can you remember a time where he specifically addressed anything tactical or coaching specific in a post-game interview? I mean, it always ends up with some, like I said, some soap opera type answer, or, you know, it's the kind of thing where if you're in a relationship, you go over to sort something out and you end up arguing about something that has nothing to do with the actual problem you have in a relationship, that's Mourinho in a press conference. It always turns into something else than what the problem actually is.
Yeah, so we'll have to monitor the situation. The reports were that he held, in quotes, crisis talks with Roman, and that he has this week to save his job, but there was a wrench thrown into that equation today. I do believe that they play Kiev in the Champions League, and I don't know if that's home or away. Maybe you could look that up. But his stadium ban has been enforced for this weekend's match against Stoke. So I don't know if that buys him some more time, perhaps, if they win or lose. Hard to say. It looks like you're feverishly looking up this Champions League information for me.
Yes, but I will say I do think that even if they lose, I think Jose would get another game or two regardless of the Stoke result because of the ban and because of the large contract. Even though I am on record saying that I don't think Chelsea would or Abramovich would think too much of buying Mourinho out for 30 million or 35 million, whatever it is.
Okay, and there was the report yesterday, which I blogged about on 2daftyanks.com, and it's the Mirror, so take it with a huge grain of salt, as I said.
The Kiev match is at Stamford Bridge, sorry.
Okay, thank you, that's fine. And the Mirror is reporting that there's a clause in Mourinho's contract that only allows or only calls for Chelsea to pay for 1 year compensation if he's sacked. Who knows if that's true, but that's out there, just to throw that out there.
Well, and even if they did have to buy the rest of it out at $35 million, I mean, all that means is they sell, like I jokingly quipped on Friday or Thursday, whenever it was, it's like, okay, well, all that means is sell all your 22 players on loan for half price, and there's your $35 million right there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. You'd probably get, even at half price, you'd probably get more than 35.
Plus, I'm saying there's your $35 million right there. Plus, who knows how much from the TV deal or from any other sale that they might make. So, the fact that, but you know, the joke point being that I don't think $35 million would be an obstacle to firing him outright.
No, that is true. So, as we said last week, we don't know how long this is going to last. So, let's get our laughs in now. So, laugh, everybody.
Yeah,
Chelsea's in a lot of trouble. And just another side point.
It's reaching epicness.
Yeah, the betting books still have them as the betting line favorites to, I guess, get fourth is what they're saying, to still make the Champions League. So I don't know if you could get some money that they won't. I don't know what odds you can get, but they might be pretty good if they're the betting favorites to make it. So you might be able to get a good bet on them not making it, and I think you're pretty much guaranteed to make your money.
Well, yeah, well, all that means is that bet's there is because they know there's a lot of Chelsea goofballs that are going to throw their money away and bet on that.
That's true. And that's part of the – yeah, we forget here, like, you know, at Vegas, they don't do a lot of that because there's a lot of stupid people. But in England, it's a different atmosphere to where the media companies have a lot of stake in this. So they do this to get people to get the, you know, the rush of blood to their head and make stupid bets.
Well, yeah, because, again, people forget the bet isn't there because the bet thinks or the betting company thinks it's going to happen. They just the bet's there because they think they can get people to bet on that.
Yeah. So hopefully someday we could get crazy proposition betting too.
Yeah, because, yeah, they – like I know you've heard me joke around millions of times before because they practically bet on everything over there.
That's right. All right, so let's – let's gone this out because we got much more to get to, much more important things than some little pony club.
Yeah. Scenes the week we don't get to talk about Chelsea.
I know. It will be a sad day when they start winning again. So it's coming. Anyway, so let's, since Jose acted very daftly, let's get our British announcer lady who we have on retainer. Let's bring her out of the closet, Corey, because it's that time of the week again.
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
We need the guts to play football. Ryan Giggs? Do you think he should be a part of the future at Manchester United?
It's a stupid question, I think. It's a stupid question.
Louis van Gaal's army! Louis van Gaal's army!
How daft.
All right, and of course, you know that is This Week in Daftness. Now, last week I said, hey, this is a tough one to beat. I don't think we'll ever beat it. We should just cancel this segment. But Corey, just a week later, we have a story that is even better than last week's. More daft. More daftness.
Nice.
Drive-time radio with more daftness now for you.
Yeah, bring it on.
Okay, this story comes out of Turkey, out of the Turkish League. And so here's what happened. So Turkish League club Trabzonspor was hosting, good Lord, Gaziantepspor, or Gaziantepspor, right?
Gaziantepspor.
Yes, there you go.
I think.
Yeah. Anyway, some Turkish club was hosting another Turkish club, and it ended up being a 2-2 draw. And the home club, Trabzonspor, was very upset at the referees because they failed to award a penalty. And so they took matters into their own hands.
Oh, boy.
Any prediction on what I'm about to tell you?
No, but hopefully there wasn't any fatalities or maimings.
No. It was no violence, thank goodness. So we could say great for that. So what happened was the president of Trabzonspor ordered his employees to lock the referees into their dressing room.
Oh.
They were held hostage into their in their dressing room until, listen to this, until 4 a.m. in the morning.
Nice.
Now, guess what had to happen for them to get released at 4 a.m. in the morning?
Man. I don't know, because that's a lot of stoppage time for them to finally award a penalty, but I don't know.
The president of Turkey called in the special forces.
Nice.
To get the referees out. So a club held hostage the referees over a non-penalty call, and it got into the politicians' hands where the president of Turkey had to call in the special forces to extract the referees out of the stadium at 4 a.m. in the morning, which is the next day technically.
Yeah, I eagerly await the Hollywood version with either Jason Statham or Vin Diesel.
Ooh, nice. Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
I can actually see them making that movie. That's how bad Hollywood is these days.
Yeah, definitely with Jason Statham in it.
Except because they're out of ideas. So, hey, maybe we should get the screenplay of this going.
Yeah, cut me in for 0.0005% of the gross. It's probably still like 20 grand.
So there you go. So I don't know. Have you heard of anything like that before? People holding referees hostage?
Not the hostage. They usually, obviously there was that terrible one in Brazil last summer, the summer before, where that lower league referee got killed. But yeah, usually it's, you know, maybe a punch thrown or, you know, chasing the referee to the dressing room. But yeah, I've never heard one where they've actually been held hostage in the dressing room.
Locked them in. Oh boy, and it took politicians and special forces to get them extracted.
Yeah, which is bad enough when it's, I mean, because the politicians got their noses in everything as it is. It's bad enough that, you know, they got to bring them into into sports.
Okay, let's move on. So there you go. I didn't know if you've heard about that. That's just something that I kind of caught by happenstance. Yeah, that's pretty funny. So another daft thing.
So can we get the EPL to hold Mike Dean hostage after a game, you know, just for shits and giggles one day?
Well, I don't know. If he deserves it, sure.
Well, of course he deserves it. He's Mike Dean.
he's Mike Dean, you idiot.
So anyway, just a thought.
Yeah. So on another daft note, and this is not the hiring, but today Aston Villa announced the long-rumored hiring of Frenchman Remy Gard to be their new manager. And I saw screenshots of this. I missed it. Now, I don't know if this is true, but supposedly in their first set of tweets and the pictures they had, you know, the nice welcome to the club, you know, hashtag welcome Remy. They spelled his name wrong, R-E-M-Y, instead of R-E-M-I. I don't know if that's true. I just saw there's people who had the screen grabs, so I have to assume that it was true. By the time I figured it out, they deleted the tweets and replaced them with the correctly spelled versions. But Aston Villa, so you could add that to, as a side runner. They don't even know how to spell their new manager's name.
Yeah, no, I'm running with that it was true because, yeah, that's something I would expect the sometimes surprisingly parochial English game to not know that there's two different spellings of Remy in France.
So, yeah, so the former Lyon manager has now taken over at Aston Villa. He was in the stands today watching his side
lose. One gooner replaces another, by the way.
Yeah, seeing his side lose to Spurs 3-1. That's true. They replaced a gooner with a gooner. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
And he was pretty stoic in the crowd today. They said he's the opposite of Tim Sherwood, and that's what I want to get to my point to. So this happens a lot of the time in soccer in Europe and in American sports is when you bring a new guy in, it's usually someone who's the exact opposite personality-wise of the coach that you just fired. So if you have the steel and the passion of one Sherwood, then you're going to bring in the calm, the calm continental manager who plays attractive attacking football. I've seen Lyon play quite a bit in the Europa League, especially when they had Remy Gard. I know Spurs played him a couple times. They play some pretty nice football, and they're a club who's known for developing some pretty good young players. They're a selling club, so they haven't been able to take that leap. But my question to you is...
Yeah, Lyon's actually a money ball club.
Mm-hmm. No, they definitely are. And... So with Remy Gard, do you think that he has the coaching pedigree to be able to enter this relegation battle and be successful, I guess, because that's what he's being brought in to do?
Does he have the pedigree? Yes. Is that the same as automatically equating to success? I don't know. Because, again, that's – Allardyce has the pedigree over at Sunderland, but – that thing is still a dumpster fire. So, Sam's never been relegated as well, but it's not looking good for him. So, yes, he has the pedigree, or yes, Gard has the pedigree. Whether that's enough to see Villa out of this situation, because like Sunderland, none of the players at Villa, again, without being personally there, I don't know for sure, but none of the players so far look pretty interested in being in a relegation fight. So that's usually never a good sign.
No, that is a good point. A lot of this has to do with the players. And I guess that's my bigger question is, yes, I mean, I've seen him coach. Obviously he knows how to coach football in an attacking style, building out of the back. But really, is that the best fit for the situation that Aston Villa sees themselves in?
Or is it, do you try and play free-flowing and go down, with a puncher's chance, or do you play like crap and still go down? It's one of those – again, I know I probably sound to some people like I always straddle the fence, but to me it's one of those – it's not a right or wrong situation. It's sometimes how do you choose, if you're going to lose, how do you choose to lose? Doing something that you feel comfortable with or doing something that you're not comfortable with? So it's, it's not necessarily a case of is it the right answer, but maybe it's the answer that, well, if we're going to go down, we feel comfortable with this manager or doing it with this manager and with this style.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting hire to me because, he's a smart man. He's got to know that there's probably a 90% chance or greater that they're going down, and he's still willing to take this on, knowing that they could go down to the championship next year. And as we said before, there's no guarantees, but perhaps with the way he plays, they might be able to come up quickly, especially if they maybe spend a little money. But it's hard to say, but I find it interesting that a manager of his experience is willing to take this on. Who's a foreign manager at that.
Well, yeah. And there again, there's several ways you can look at that, you know, he's French, they get relegated. So what? I can always go back and get a job with Nice or, you know, Montpellier or somebody like that, you know, back in my homeland. So at the end of the day, it's not that he won't care, but that, you know, kind of like Ranieri going to Leicester, kind of done it all before. So if I fail, then it's not really that big a deal, because if I don't get a job, well, then I just take a sabbatical for a couple of years and then, you know, pop up in Grenoble in Ligue 2 or something. Go ahead.
But I'm implying that I think he's there for the long haul. If they go down, I think he'll be their manager next year.
But what I'm saying is, from his situation, it's a no lose, because if they keep him on, well, then obviously he keeps the job, and if they don't, okay, well, then I'll just go back to France or just take a sabbatical for a year and then pop up back in France. You know.
Gotcha. Understood. So let's do a little update on the relegation battle. Now, I know I did some points per game analysis for Chelsea, so I've done the same for these sides who are currently in relegation. And so I will give you the numbers, Corey, and you tell me your analysis of these numbers. So what I did is did the same thing. Actually, instead of the last 4 years, I did the last 5 years. So, you know, the magic number is 40 is what they say. But in actuallyhood, over the past 5 years, the numbers to have survival have been 40 points, 37 points, 37 points, 34 points, and then 36 points. When you divide that up, that comes up to 36.8. So we'll round that up to 37. So we'll assume that 37 points has been the average in the past 5 years to survive. And 37 points over a 38-game season registers to 0.97 points per game is what you have to average. Okay? So now when you
– okay.
Yeah, so when you look at the relegated sides, Villa right now through 11 games are averaging 0.36 per game, which is terrible, obviously. 0.97 ensures survival. So to get to that 0.97 for the season – Aston Villa, under their new manager, Remy Gard, have to average 1.22 points per game the rest of the way, which really isn't all that bad. You know, you're talking roughly a win every three games. Then, you know, maybe get a draw or two in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 1.22, you're going to have to win probably a little bit more than that. So that might be a tough number for them to go. They basically have to quadruple their production from what they're on pace on. Sunderland, these are all very close. Sunderland, so far this season, are at 0.54 points per game. From their last 27 games, they have to average 1.14 points per game. And then Newcastle is at 0.63 per game. And they have to average 1.11 per game to reach the 37 mark. So when you're looking at the situation these clubs are in compared to Chelsea, it's a much more doable situation, I would say, for them to get hot, even just for a short amount of time. You know, maybe you go on an unbeaten 4 or 5 game unbeaten streak to where you win 3, maybe draw 2. That might be just all you need to be able to stay up in the long term, to whereas Chelsea is going to have to play, you know, championship level football from here on out with basically no more slip ups.
Yeah, well, I think, with, you know, when you're at the bottom of the table, one of the big keys is always going to be trying to get 3 points from your direct rivals in the table. I mean, that's going to
– because the famous six-pointer games.
Yeah, so, you know, in theory, that's sextupling your output because of the six-pointer thing, not just quadrupling. So – because that's what I was going to say, because you could easily triple your output just by winning a couple games, much less getting to that – you know, actually tripling your output. Because yeah, that's one of those that, yeah, it's only 3 points, but like you said, the proverbial 6-pointer, you're gaining the 3 points, but you're also keeping them from getting the 3 points. So it's like 6 points. So, you know, a side like Villa, say they get 3 points against Bournemouth, or, you know, all six on the road, or, you know, all six, you know, meaning both games against Bournemouth, you know, that's huge right there. And then, you know, maybe try and nick a couple of draws on the road against bigger sides. And that could lead to, you know, Villa get, or a side like Villa getting back on track to, you know, to getting to survival. But just on looks alone at the moment, if I had to pick three to go down, I know this wasn't the question, but I'll offer it anyway. Just on looks alone, and if I had to pick three to go down right now, it would be Villa, Villa, Sunderland, and Bournemouth.
Yeah, and I would agree on that. And the Bournemouth situation is bad because it's basically injury related. I know we haven't mentioned it on this pod, but they've lost their lead striker, Callum Wilson, for the season. So that's a big blow. And they've had a bunch of other injuries as well. So I would say, yeah, those are the three right now. Those are the three odds on clubs to go down.
Yeah, injury related. And I get the sense they're not going to go on a spending spree in January, knowing that they're probably going to go down, and so they're going to save their money when they go back down to the championship.
Yeah, just the Burnley. Same thing Burnley did last year.
Right, right.
And that's working out for Burnley. So far, they're still in the thick of things.
Because they were going to cash in Callum Wilson at the end of this year anyway.
They probably were. Injury,
obviously.
Yeah, but now with the injury, he'll probably have to go back down to the championship for a season and prove that he's recovered from that. So – and that could, they'll probably help them gain promotion again, perhaps. So,
right. But that's what I mean. So now with his injury, I think they'll hold on to the money instead of trying to replace him and then try and use that money back in the championship when he's healthy again. That's where I was going with that.
Mm-hmm. And that would make sense. So, yeah. So there's a lot there. And we're in November here. So now this is where things pick up. And I think the months of November and December are really going to shape things for the end, and we're going to get a lot of answers about a lot of different clubs here when the games are starting to come thick and fast, even though we do have another darn dreaded international break here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, which obviously I'm not looking forward to because, yeah, you know, us over at Arsenal starting to pick up injuries and, you know, with a lot of guys going on internationals that week, I'm starting to dread the international break injuries.
Yes, and there's been a lot of them in a lot of different places. And so that is a topic for another time. We'll have to cover that. Maybe during the international break itself. So, all right. So that is the relegation battle. And then Remy Gard, good luck to you, pal, I guess is all we can say, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously being a former Gooner, I hope he succeeds. And, you know, Villa being a pretty big club traditionally, I think they, you know, they deserve to stay up, not in the sense of they're better than everybody else, but just meaning that the fans there have, you know, they deserve better, that the fans deserve better than what the team's given them over the years, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. And they've never been relegated in the Premier League era.
Yes, correct.
And they're off to their worst start in the history of their club, I think is what they said today, at any level. So it doesn't bode well at all.
Yeah, no, and like I said, both them and Sunderland, they just don't look like sides that are up for the relegation battle.
Though Sunderland showed some signs of life, at least scoring some goals this weekend, so... maybe.
Yeah, they just, I don't know. They just don't have, I just don't get the sense that they just give off the air of going down to me. And I'm usually pretty good with that. Okay. You know me and my vibes.
Yeah. Vibe it up, man. So, all right. Well, we've done This Week in Daftness, and now it's time for our other segment. We've missed it the past couple weeks, but I've dug up a good one, I think. So, let's introduce said segment.
Say my name.
It's time for What's in a Name with Two Daft Yanks, highlighting origins behind club names throughout world football. Now back to Corey and Chad.
All right, and then it's time for What's in a Name, Corey, where we break down the meaning and the history of a name of a club in world football. And this is becoming my new favorite thing, just trying to research what's a good story. And for the first time in this series, Corey, we are going to South America.
Oh.
So I think we've done Europe the whole time. I think the two or three times we've done this. But now we are going to South America. And this is one that we've joked about a lot. And the club in focus this week is Newell's Old Boys.
Argentina.
Yes, that's right. They are the Argentina. Yes, they're the Argentinian club currently playing in the Primera Division, which is the first division in Argentina. They are a club that was founded in November of 1903, actually on November 3rd, so about 112 years ago tomorrow is when they were founded. So that's kind of fitting that we've picked them close to their birthday.
Yeah, coincidental, not irony.
Yes, so happy birthday, Newell's Old Boys.
Happy birthday, old boy.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, we always joke that someday we can't wait for the MLS expansion side that is going to be called Don Garber's Boys.
Yeah.
It's coming, I think. I don't know who. But do you have any inkling on the history of this name?
I think Old Boys clubs generally were older than like college students or something, or no?
You're kind of close. So let me give you and all our great listeners out there the history of how Newell's Old Boys got their name. So as I said, they are a club in Rosario, Argentina. They were founded in 1903, and their name comes from a British guy named Isaac Newell, who was one of the pioneers of early Argentine football. He was born in 1853, passed away in 1907, but he went down there, him and a bunch of other guys, and they established football in Argentina in the late 1800s. So Isaac Newell is the key here. And Newell's was founded by a guy named Claudio Newell, who I do believe was a founding member of Newell's Old Boys, and he was related to Isaac Newell, so they decided to name the club after him. And Newell was actually a school, okay? So the name of the school was Newell, and it was chosen in tribute to Isaac Newell. And the Old Boys part comes from in Argentina with these Brits in charge. The Old Boys referred to alumni or graduates of the school.
Okay, yes.
So when they first started.
I was in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you're in the neighborhood. So everybody who played for this club at the very early years was a graduate of Newell School. And that's how they got their name. So you got Newell, who is the English guy from Kent, who came down with a bunch of other Brits, and they taught Argentina the game of football. And they had the school, and they're called the Old Boys because they, in the early days, they were all graduates of that school. So, yeah, I had no idea. So there you go. That's how you get that very English-sounding name in a, you know, a Latin American country.
Yeah, which you actually get quite a good bit of in some of the more local clubs, because like you said, a lot of the guys that went over there, they went over to teach the game. They end up founding a school. Boom, you get a club. Which exactly. could happen here if people could only just get outside of their box of closed leagues, but obviously that's a topic for another day.
That's right. And you know who they say here is...
So much potential. Anyway, sorry.
And you know who's who was a part of their youth system many years ago?
Wasn't it Maradona?
It doesn't say that here.
Or Messi.
No.
No.
No. Well, here's some of the famous players who played for them. Gabriel Batistuta.
Batistuta.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you're right. Not Batista. I misread that.
He was pretty freaking good.
Yes. Gabriel Hines.
Man, you.
Mm-hmm. Maxi Rodriguez, who's kind of more contemporary, but he's retired now. Oh, you're right. This does say Elis Messi and Maradona at the bottom. They briefly played for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was pretty sure both were there when they were like 9 or 10 years
old. I don't know why they didn't list them first, so I said you were wrong. In this list, they're listed
because they were only there as kids. They didn't play on their first team like the others did.
Well, they're saying Maradona played 5 games in 1993.
Okay.
That's why
1993.
Yeah, and I didn't know this is one. Mauricio Pochettino.
Maradona. Yeah.
Mauricio Pochettino was actually part of the club for a while. So there you go. Hey, that's not half bad.
You know, Batistuta, he played for Fiorentina back when Serie A was the best league. And yeah, Batistuta was one of those pure goal poacher guys.
Mm-hmm. And a great thing about this club, too, is their secondary, their nickname, has a great story as well. Do you have any idea what their nickname is? This is fascinating to me.
No, but I'll probably know it when you tell me, obviously. But you know what I mean? I'll probably recognize it. Go ahead.
Newell's old boy's nickname is La Lepra.
La Lepra?
Yeah.
Which is?
That is Spanish for the leprosy.
Whoa.
Yeah, and you know how they got that?
Cheer for us. We're catching. I have no idea.
No. In the 1920s, they agreed to play their crosstown rivals, who I'm forgetting already. It's that other club in Rosario.
Rosario Central?
There we go, yes. So they agreed to play Central in a fundraiser match to raise money for a bunch of people who got leprosy. But the other team pulled out, and they forfeited the match. So from hence on then, their nickname became the Lepers.
Huh.
Which has got to be. I can't think of – there can't be another club in the world – who are the lepers?
Not unless Mother Teresa started one.
That is very true.
Didn't she work with lepers?
Yes, she did. So there you go. So there's the history of Newell's Old Boys, the club of Messi as a youth.
Yeah. And there again, they're just not something that was just created out of air to serve the purpose of some league. That is so weird.
No, it was... started by Englishmen who founded a school and started a football club at that school in 1903 in Argentina.
Whew. Amazing the things you can do if you just step outside of your box.
So a big round of applause for them. So as I said, this segment's becoming my favorite segment because you and I are learning a lot through all this, and we're just showing how diverse the game is throughout the world, and how even back when these clubs were founded, you know, over 100 years ago in a lot of these cases, to where in a time where things were not nearly as globalized as they were today, pretty much all these clubs that we've touched on have some kind of global effect even back then.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things you could argue, you know, as bad as empires are, we owe soccer being a global game to the British Empire.
That's very true. That cannot be argued. So, all right, so we hope you enjoyed that. And again, if you have suggestions on good stories that we should look into to highlight in this segment, please let us know. Drop us a line at @2daftyanks on Twitter. And yeah, give us your suggestions.
Yeah, if anybody's got suggestions, I would definitely be interested, because this is one of the things that I find arguably the most fascinating about this sport is these club origins. So I would, very, meaning I would love to research one for if anybody's got a suggestion.
Yes, and you know what? Maybe we someday could write a book with a bunch of these.
It's a possibility.
That would be a pretty good book.
Yeah. That's self-published, keep all the profits.
That's a very good book idea.
And then buy out LLC and then shut them down.
Well, hey, I don't know if Grantland could get shut down and everybody.
Hey, I'm dreaming big here.
Yeah. Why not, man? Dream big, right?
That's right.
Go big, go home.
That's right. That's the good thing about dreams. If they fail, who cares? Just get another one.
That's true. A much smaller one, of course, so you can keep your
confidence. Even bigger.
Oh, even bigger?
Yeah, dream even bigger.
All right. Well, you know what's a dream of pretty much every English side out there?
Well, it used to be winning the Premier League. Now it's hoping to see more schadenfreude from Jose, but I don't know what.
No, it's to win the League Cup.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Yes.
So let's just highlight some of the scores from last week in the League Cup. I'll run them down, and then we'll look forward to the draw here. Everton beat Norwich in penalties. Sheffield Wednesday slapped down Arsenal 3-0.
Yeah. It was so shite, it was awesome.
Yeah, Hull beat Leicester City in penalties. Stoke, 10-man Stoke, which is pretty funny, beat Chelsea on penalties. Manchester City beat down Crystal Palace 5-1. Southampton beat Aston Villa 2-1. Liverpool under the resurgent Klopp, the Kloppinator, who's now won 2 on the trot. Watch out. Beat Bournemouth 1-0. And then in some more schadenfreude, Middlesbrough beat Manchester United on penalties.
Which is impressive when you beat a side that's got 2 current Ballon d'Or winners.
Ooh, yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah, Memphis and Marshall. They, you know, Ballon d'Or flavor of the month.
Oh, I got you. Okay. I was like, what? I should have challenged you on that, but I should have figured that was a joke.
Well, yeah, you know, martial law apparently, you know, got stricken down this month.
There was a time when, you know, Man U probably did have 2 Ballon d'Or winners on their team. Anyway, these are those days, unfortunately, yeah, for them.
Middlesbrough restores democracy and overturns martial law.
Yeah, so here is the draw that will take place on the 1st of December and the 2nd of December of these next rounds. You have Middlesbrough will be hosting Everton. Stoke will be hosting Sheffield Wednesday. Manchester City will be hosting Hull. And Southampton will be hosting Liverpool. So when you look at these, I would say, you know, the League Cup is pretty wide open. Except for maybe you could probably give Manchester City the nod. But the way these ties have been going, you never know.
Well, yeah, well, City's the obvious favorite. Even if they're going to play Kalui, I eat nachos, or whatever his name is. Up
Khaleesi,
front.
I eat nachos?
Oh, Khaleesi, I eat nachos. Ride him in the cup and bag some silverware, City. Mainly just so I could tweet, I eat nachos every time he plays.
So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens here in this guy. You got Liverpool, obviously. The Klopp story, people are going to try to trump up.
Make a run because of trying to get a trophy for Klopp.
Hmm. Yeah. So then they could retire him, and then he could go out on top.
Yeah.
After just one half season.
Winning percentage second to none. Take that, yeah. Sherwood.
Yeah, well, that hasn't worked out so well for some people.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but Klopp might be smart enough to quit when that's actually going to be true. Or, you know, longer than a year.
That's anyway, true.
I'm just.
Yeah, who knows?
Talking out of my butt here.
So, yeah, so that's the final 8. We'll soon be down to the final 4 in about a month here. And then that's when you get to 2-legged ties. So remember, yeah, the semifinals. Go to 2-legged ties. And, yeah. And you have 1, 2, 3 lower league clubs in the mix still, which is good to see.
Yeah, and Wednesday, obviously, I'm going to say this because we lost, but yeah, Wednesday looked pretty decent, and they looked like one of those clubs that doesn't like to be pushed around. So I would expect them to do well in their next match.
Yeah, against Stoke, they might have a pretty decent chance. And but unfortunately for them, they're playing Tuesday the 1st of December and not Wednesday the 2nd. So maybe that's bad luck.
But maybe that was part of their juju when they – or, you know, maybe that was part of their good juju when they beat us, is they didn't feel the pressure of playing on Wednesday being named Wednesday.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, you could argue that.
Yeah, because we played them on a Tuesday too, and like I said, they were top-notch.
All right, Sheffield Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, again, maybe, you know, I don't want to go all political, but maybe they identify with a Tuesday club. You know, maybe they're now self-identifying as a Tuesday
club. Yeah, that's good.
Anyway. Oof.
Anyway, all right, so let's – looking forward, I know there's Europe. We're back in Europe this week. We've got Champions League stuff. I don't really –
Yeah, because since we beat Bayern last time, I fully expect to get slaughtered this time.
Well, that's at Bayern, correct? Yes. Or you're going to be at home? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's in the Allianz Arena, where we've one win and a draw the last two times out, but I fully expect to get slaughtered.
Okay. And there's some other good games as well. The group stage of the Champions League doesn't really do it for me. I'm like, eh. They need to revamp that. We'll talk about that someday here soon. Or did we already do that?
Yeah, I think we talked about it once upon a time.
Oh, we did.
I vaguely recall my unpopular opinion of making it smaller, which will never happen, but that's...
No, I don't know if we did that. I don't know. It doesn't really matter, but you know what does matter on Sunday? This coming Sunday is...
The first proper
North London Derby, the league version. We've already had a League Cup version where Matthew Flamini did his best...
Zidane.
Yeah, he did a Zidane impersonation, scoring his only brace in his career ever, which was absolutely pathetic, but hey.
With a half volley with the ball falling out of the sky.
But hey, it saved us from an embarrassing defeat to Sheffield Wednesday in the next round.
Yeah, you know, I always like the clubs that go out sooner that still try to pull the one, oh, well, you lost to a lower league club. Yeah, well, yeah. You know. You could have lost to the best team in the world. You still went out earlier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So we have the North London Derby.
It's like the people that say, oh, well, you know, you won the national title, but we beat you. Yeah, okay. Good luck with that. Go print a T-shirt.
Yeah. So the North London Derby will be contested Sunday at the Emirates. And it should be a good matchup, Corey. We got Arsenal. You guys are tied on points for the top of the league, but down on goal differential to Manchester City. And Spurs, with their win today, have gone 10 games unbeaten since losing the opening weekend on an own goal to Manchester United. So both sides are in good form, and it should be a very spirited match.
Yeah, you can say we're second. We don't pull that Spurs stuff over at Arsenal where we're joint top, only separated by goal differential.
Okay.
Because the tiebreaker actually matters. That's why it's there. So you can say it. We're second.
Okay. I didn't want to invoke the angry wolf.
No, but I'm still gonna use it as a shot. The time one of your main accounts was we're joint top, only separated by goal differential.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it kind of matters anyway. So you could say it. We're second. We're second in the table.
Okay. So second in the table versus Spurs, who I think moved up to fifth today.
Yes.
And as I said, 9 games unbeaten.
Yeah, what?
10 games unbeaten. One actual loss
in the league.
What?
I believe y'all are the only team that has only one actual loss in the league.
Well, yeah, we have a bunch of draws, unfortunately. For us, or that number would be higher. But, yeah, so as I said, both sides are in form, and I know NBC's been advertising it already for since Saturday. They've been advertising the North London Derby with a nice little commercial. So it should be fun for all.
I just don't want to pick up another injury. Me or the team.
Yeah, well, maybe we might slip some extra bucks to old Byron to, you know, have a couple questionable tackles or two.
That'd be nice. Yeah, from Vidal.
Yeah, there we go. Go break someone's ankle, please.
Yeah. Yeah, because I did have to throw myself in there because I don't know if you saw that tweet. When we scored the third against Man U, I celebrated so hard that I thought I had pulled something. I had slightly strained a muscle.
That's heartbreaking.
Well, I was able to continue rooting on the match, but yeah, just getting to that age where I gotta bring my celebrations down to 8 from like 11, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I got you. We all reach that point at some point in time.
Yeah, especially when you don't work out regularly. Those muscles start going like crazy when you hit 40. What little I have to begin with. All right, this show's petering out fast.
It is, yeah. So I was about to say, that's all I have to say. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, for having nothing to say, I actually had quite a bit to say. Ah.
Just like Mourinho.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just like the great manipulator.
That's right. Yeah, maybe I'll go manage a Little Pony Club.
All right, maybe. My Little Pony FC.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, you Sparkles.
Care Bears, even.
Yeah, or that, too.
Maybe that's yeah. Instead of a pony club, I'll do the Care Bears.
Yeah, Lionheart.
Oh no, the Shirt Tails. I don't know if you remember the Shirt Tails. I'll definitely go manage the Shirt Tails. They had a raccoon.
Tails. Yeah. What are the Shirt Tails?
The Shirt Tails. They were kind of like a Care Bears group, but they were like these woodland animals, and one of them was like a raccoon.
Oh no, I don't remember them.
Go Google it after the show, people.
Okay. Shirt Tails?
Yes. Shirt Tails.
Okay. Sounds pretty stupid, but I'll do it. All right. So
I'm sure it would be stupid now, but, you know, they were awesome when I was 7.
I got you. All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening to this week's show, and thank you for always for your listenership and your feedback. We will be back next week, and we'll have much to talk about the North London Derby, probably some more Chelsea Schadenfreude, and action in Europe. So join us then. And until then, enjoy your week and be safe. So for Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith saying adios.
Remind me to give you the number of that lasagna place, Spurs.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at twodaftyanks.com or at @TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.